ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 203 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I interview Russell Brettholz, creator of a great book that I discovered at the New York Comic Con called Sidekicked. It has to do with what makes a hero and what makes a sidekick, and how a real-life experience helped him create this comic, which is an interesting take on the superhero genre. We delve into how the book came together and how it was published at Darby Pop Publishing, a great company that I've recently found as well. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Okay, I'm talking today with Russell Brettholz, the creator of Sidekicked, and that's got an ED on the end of it. We need to make sure about that, which has a very interesting take on sidekicks. How are you doing today, Russell?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Wayne.
I got to ask you, because this book is so well put together, is this your first comic?
It actually is, yes.
Oh, wow. I can't believe it, because it's really nicely held together. And it comes out from Darby Pop, and let's see, the other one's Magnetic Press.
That's correct.
So how did you get this comic to come, before we get into the subject matter? How did you make it happen?
I had to go through Kickstarter, because I knew with the script it was superheroes, and I, growing up reading superhero comics, mostly X-Men and Spider-Man over at Marvel, and I knew that, you know, superheroes have a particular look to them. And in order to get that look, I was going to need a very talented artist, and that was going to cost probably a lot of money, I knew going in. So I actually had to go through Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding website, mm-hmm. in order to basically take enough pre-sales to fund the artwork for the book.
Mm, great. And how much did you ask for, may I ask?
I had to do two campaigns. The first one was just to fund the first issue. And I needed $3,000. I actually sold off part of my personal comic book collection to help get the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was done with that, I needed about $3,000 more. And we actually raised over $7,000 in that first campaign. And I was able to roll that to get the issues 2 through 4 started. And then I had to go back to Kickstarter to get it finished. I needed another $10,000. And we just eked our way over the finish line there. So $17,000 through Kickstarter, about another $3,000 that I kicked in personally myself. So about $20,000 to get the whole thing made.
Goodness, and people say comics are easy to make.
They are not.
So you really have to believe in your project in order to go through all those good things, in my
opinion. Yeah, absolutely. You have to know that what you're doing is the right thing for you and also for the audience that you're trying to attract.
Now, of course, superhero comics, we've read these for decades, and yet you came up with a very different spin on it. How did you come up with this? Was this an idea you had for a long time? Maybe you should tell a little bit what it's all about.
Yeah, so the story of Sidekicked is superhero sidekicks get sick and tired of being disrespected by the heroes that they work for, so they go on strike. Mm-hmm. And the way that came about, I was working as the assistant to a financial planner. And my job was mostly clerical stuff, taking care of the files, paperwork, things like that, making appointments. But the bulk of my job, I discovered, was fixing the mistakes of my boss, the financial planner. Mm-hmm. And when I asked to be put on a promotional track, I actually got fired. Mm. And I couldn't explain it. I didn't understand it. I was very good at my job. And I knew there was a story there. I was not getting the respect I felt I deserved for the job I was doing. I had his back at all times. And yet it didn't help me one bit. And having grown up reading superheroes, I knew that I could convert that to a story about sidekicks and the heroes that they worked for.
So it's so interesting to me, because sidekicks have always been the underdogs of the comic world. And you'd think with all the decades and decades of superhero storytelling, somebody would have hit this kind of idea before. So it's great that you had this happen to you, because this is something we haven't read before in comics.
I consider it a blessing at this point. It was pretty crappy at the time. Yeah. But now that I have a comic book and it's on the shelves, it's on Comixology, it feels amazing to know that I was able to take that experience and convert it into something so incredible for me.
Mm-hmm. Issues number 1 and 2 are now available on Comixology. I know the trade is out. In fact, I tried to buy the trade at New York Comic Con at the Darby Pop booth, but they had already sold out of them.
Yes, we sold out around 5 o'clock on Saturday. I was there that whole weekend, and I really got handed to Darby Pop. They said that they were going to push the book hard, and they did. And we were selling about, I think I calculated at one point, one book every 10 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, just incredible, especially for a first-time author like myself, who nobody has ever heard of. But I think, you know, it was really the story really resonated with people. The artwork, you know, when they were flipping through that book, they could just see the effort that went into it.
Because I was recommended to it by a friend who really had read it and really liked it. And so I rushed over as soon as I heard about it, I ran over to the booth. But like I said, by the time I got there, I was too late. So I always think that's a good sign, though. You know, I'd rather be able to read it through Comixology right now, and I've ordered the trade through my comic store, which hasn't come yet. But it's a good sign when something sells out and when people are really interested in it. So I think you're doing a good job.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Now, why don't we dive into the book and the story some here, because I'm really fascinated by it. First thing I want to ask, though, before I do that, how did you get to Darby Pop? Did you submit it to them? How did you get involved with their company?
I got very, very lucky, actually, is what happened. While I was running the Kickstarter for the first issue to get that funded, I think that was, you know, it's funny, the timeline gets blurry now because it's actually been such a prolonged period. But I believe it was either 2 years ago that I ran that first campaign, and they contacted me. It was one of their editors there was looking at Kickstarter and came across my campaign, and he emailed me out of the blue, said, you know, hi, I'm from Darby Pop Publishing. Here's our website. Please go take a look at us. We really like the story. We like the artwork. And we would like you to consider allowing us to publish through you. And so I did just that. I went to their website. I liked everything that I read about them. I took a look at some of the other books that they had already put out, and just very, very impressive work. And I thought, how could I turn these people down? This is such a great opportunity for me.
Mm-hmm. So how did you come across the artist then? Did you do the like DeviantArt route, or was this somebody you knew? How did you find this guy?
I actually had to have two artists on this book, or two pencilers, I should say. Mm-hmm. And the first penciler, who's my co-creator, and he did the entire first issue, is Miguel Mendoza. And I met him through comicbookresources.com. They show your work portion on their website, on their forums. And he was promoting another book that he had done. And I saw his artwork, and it was superhero-based, and I knew from the very first page that this was the guy that was going to make this book with me. And I actually emailed him just out of the blue. He had no idea who I was. I asked him if I could send him the script, and he said, sure. And over the course of a weekend, we actually hammered out a contract, and he got started on the first issue. And I felt very, very lucky, because his artwork really was exactly what was in my head for this book. And unfortunately for me, he was just about to break out at Xenoscope. And he was working on a couple of issues for one of their big events that summer. And he had not been published yet when he agreed to work on Sidekicked with me. But that summer, he did get published through Xenoscope. And then they asked him to come back and do some more. And then he got a miniseries with them called Warlord of Oz. And then he wound up doing The Little Mermaid with Meredith Finch, which just came out a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And he just kept getting more and more work, and he just could not do the rest of Sidekick for me, which I feel so happy for him, you know, because he's actually now going to be working on December's Wonder Woman, because mm-hmm. Meredith Finch is taking over Wonder Woman at DC, mm-hmm. and she needed an artist to do the first book over there, and she immediately grabbed Miguel. So I'm so happy for him, and I was bummed out for me at the time, but I knew I needed to replace him, so I went looking for a replacement artist, and I just kind of put it out there on Digital Webbing, which is another creator-heavy website, and I said, here's my book. I need a replacement artist who can stay true to the artwork that Miguel had started, and I got an email from Bong Dezo. And for those of you who don't know Bong Dezo, he was the penciler on Deadpool Merc with a Mouth. He did Avengers the Initiative. He did Moon Knight Shadowlands. And, you know, those are big books over at Marvel. I did not think I was going to be able to afford him. But he really liked what he saw, and he was able to cut me a deal. I don't know why, but I'm not. I'm very thankful for it, and I thought he did a really great job. And I don't think I could have asked for a better penciler to come and finish the book for me.
Now, how many issues did Miguel do, and then how many did Bong do?
Miguel did the pencils and the inks on the first issue, and then Bong did the pencils on issues 2 through 4.
Okay, great. So now, how long has this been coming out now? Issue 1 came out when?
Issue 1 was just released through Comixology in September. Mm-hmm. But because of the Kickstarter, it's been done since January of this year.
Mm. Great. So this is out, and the trade, of course, is available. And if you don't have it at your local shop, you can ask them to order it. And so we'll get to that. Either that, or you can do like I do and get it through Comixology. But it's kind of a race now to see which one comes first. Is the Comixology issue is going to come out, or the trade, which one's going to show up first? Whichever it does, I'll be glad to read it that way. So I'm looking forward to that. So now, I noticed also you had 3 different inkers according to the issues. Was that a case of scheduling too?
It started that way, because originally Miguel was going to pencil and ink all of the issues, but then when he got pulled away, I again put out an SOS, I need a new inker, and Rick Ketchum, who did a lot of work with Dark Horse and Dynamite, he worked on Runaways and New Excalibur over at Marvel, again, just another professional who I was not expecting to hear from a first-time book like mine, and he started on issue 2, but unfortunately, he only got about halfway through it, and he wound up passing away, which was devastating. I certainly didn't expect it. I don't think he expected it. And so that hit us hard. But, you know, the book needed to be completed. So I went back out onto the internet, this time through Facebook. There are some really great creator pages on Facebook. And I was able to track down an inker named Glauber Matos. And he's out of, oh gosh, where does Glauber live? I actually forget. I want to say Brazil. And his inks were just phenomenal from what I saw. So I contacted him and he was available and he was able to finish issue 2 and then also issues 3 and 4.
Great. I'm kind of putting off the story because I like the story so much, but why don't we go ahead and get into it? You talked about the fact that this was based on your real life experience. And I have to say, if you read the story, what's going on, there's a wonderful subtitle. It says, Sidekicked, Dedicated, Dependable, Disrespected. And the disrespect is in red letters. I kind of like that about it. And you said that this is based on how you felt that you were treated in the workplace. And I have to say, I got a kick because the sidekicks, they form a union, is what the basic premise is. And this all happens in the first issue, so we're not giving a whole lot away. And I got a huge kick because the villains actually seem to be somewhat corporate in nature. Was that intentional?
It absolutely was intentional.
Okay.
I wrote issue 1 actually several years ago, because that's when I got fired from my job. And at that time, my wife was pregnant. So I only had the 1 issue scripted. And then she had the baby. And it was like, okay, I'll just leave that. And I'll be a dad and a good dad for a little while. But then when I came back to the book, the financial crisis was in full mode. You know, the whole world economy was falling apart. And it was the bankers and the CEOs who seemed to be doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very easy for me to make that analogy and place them as the villains of the piece. You know, this very corporate monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who are overseeing everything. And it just made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say the very first page in the very first chapter is a really shocking thing. And I don't know if you want to give it away, but let's just say that you talked about how it affected you to, you know, be removed from your job. It obviously affects the sidekick quite strongly because he is in a very dark place on the very first page of the first issue.
That's right. The big thing there is everything I've ever read about writing a comic book is you need to have the reader by the first page. They want to turn the page. And I needed a gripping image. I knew it was going to be a one-panel splash. And I knew it needed to make a statement. I knew it needed to just really encapsulate what the book was going to be about, what the sidekick was feeling, and not to give it away. But that image was one of the first things that I had thought of when I sat down to write this book. So it really just jumped right out at me.
What's funny is then you go onto the other pages, and on the left-hand side, you have something that repeats that image, and then we come to see what's happened to him and why he feels in this dark place, all these different things that have gone on. So it's really well written. It's really amazing to me. I was just, you know, you talk about drawing people in on the first page. I was pulled in right on the first page because I felt for the guy. You can't help but feel for this person. And as they go along, we come to see that not only was his existence as a sidekick kind of rough, but also his personal life was falling at the same time. And maybe they're related.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the nature of being the sidekick that I really wanted to look at. What's the difference? You know, what makes somebody a sidekick versus a hero? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think too often it's based on powers. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, the sidekick just doesn't have as much power as the hero, and that's why he's the sidekick. But I really don't think that's what it was. That's not the story I wanted to tell. I wanted it to be more about ambition. Mm-hmm. And a powered individual becomes a hero because they have the ambition to become a hero. Mm-hmm. And the sidekicks are more, they're more down to earth. They really just want to help people, and that's why they're doing it. They're not in it for the fame. They're not in it for the glory. So they're content to just be the sidekick. But a hero has to really crave the attention and the battle and the fight. And it's really just more in it to look at life with more ambition.
Mm-hmm. Well, right off the bat, we see that the main character, his hero identity is Phantasm.
Correct.
And he, of all things, he works with a superpowered character by the name of Mr. Marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, has multiple things going on there I don't even want to get into, because there's a lot of tropes in superhero characters, and you pull on one of them, this sort of flying super guy. And what's funny is he goes along and he has his own set of rules, and poor old Phantasm is going along trying to clean up the mess when he's fighting a villain named Inferno. And, you know, there's the crowds cheering for Mr. Marvelous. And then when things don't quite go on the ground the way that people would like, people are yelling at him because there's stones that have hit the ground. He's trying to move them away. And people are yelling at him, hey, you can't put that there.
Right. I really wanted to highlight the distinction between the ways the heroes get treated and sidekicks. Going into it, I thought of, you know, aside from just mine, you know, I was an assistant, but I also wanted to think, all right, what other jobs does this apply to? Nurses and doctors, paralegals and lawyers, secretaries and executives. Nobody ever wants to talk to the underling, so to speak. You know, so everybody wants to go in and talk to the doctor. Doctor, there's something wrong with me. Even though the nurse probably knows better than the doctor and can help you so much. And yet, time and again, we hear just nurses talking about how poorly they get treated, mm-hmm. even though they do such amazing work. And I really wanted to carry that into this universe of superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like it too. After the things take place, Phantasm tries to have a discussion with Mr. Marvelous, and he actually calls him by his first name. And of course, he won't answer to that.
That's right.
And the thing that really got me on that page was when finally Phantasm calls him by his superhero name, he recognizes that. When Mr. Marvelous turns and says, yes, Phantasm, there's this kind of wicked grin on his face.
Yeah, Miguel did an incredible job of capturing. In the script, I said smug. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is, I don't know how you would draw smug, but Miguel did it. Mm-hmm. And when people read that in the issue, I think they're going to see it as well. Mm-hmm. Because that's exactly, I always say this, particularly with Miguel, he was drawing precisely what I had in my head. Very, very little did I have to go back to him and say, you know, I think I'd like to change this panel. He really captured what I was looking for. And that panel in particular, with the smug look of Mr. Marvelous only responding to his superhero name, really did it for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, then later in the book, in the first issue, things resolve because somebody else is having a bad day, and Phantasm is called into trying to help that person.
Right. I really wanted to create a sense of family between their five main sidekicks. And I wanted to give each of them a problem with their hero, or at least a problem in the superhuman world in which they lived in. For example, there's one guy, Walter, who is Frostbite. And Walter, we don't see him with his hero, but we do see him working at the newspaper. He's the assistant editor. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice scene with him and the editor of the paper. And the editor-in-chief is saying, you know, nobody's interested in the sidekick story. Mm-hmm. And he's saying this to Walter, who is a sidekick. So I really wanted all of the guys to highlight these potential problems of being a sidekick and have them all commiserating with each other, which is why I've got them at the bar at both the beginning and the end of the first issue, because I really wanted to bookend that these guys all get along after a hard day's work, just like anybody else. They go out to the bar and they share horror stories. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and eventually it's Dan who is really the most popular among them. Among the five sidekicks, it's Dan as Mustang who is the most popular. And it's because of that popularity, it gets him in trouble with the hero that he works for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when something bad happens to Dan, he becomes kind of the catalyst. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got Richard to talk to and he's got the other sidekicks to talk to. But it's when the bad thing happens to him that it really sets off a chain of events that leads to the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm. Which is, there's such an interesting parallel between like issue one and issue two. Issue one is when they go on strike. In issue two, you see some of the same situations, but you see how differently things go when the sidekick's not there to help out.
Yes, and I very much wanted to do that. I was originally trying to script it in three issues, and all three issues were going to try to mirror each other, but I found out when I was writing it that I had too much story for three, and it wound up expanding out to four. So issues one and two do a very good job mirroring each other, and I feel that parts of one and four do as well. But I wasn't quite able to carry the parallels as far as I wanted to, but I still think we hit it. You really get it in one and two, you get a little bit in three, and you also get a little bit in four. But I very much wanted to highlight that here's the world in issue one with the sidekicks helping, and here's the world in issue two and three where the sidekicks are not helping.
At the end of issue two, I have to mention too, is, you know, up until this point, I think his name is Kevin, is Phantasm. Everything's been going along, and it's going the way that he expects it to. But when they get to the end of the second issue, and things now are starting to go wrong for the heroes, they're not quite as admired as they were. And the other sidekicks are saying to him, don't you think we've done enough? Don't you think we should get back to business? And he basically says, no, it's because the heroes still think that they can save the city by themselves. And at that point, I actually started to feel a little unhappy with him.
Yes, I very much needed conflict. You know, that's no story is good without conflict. And I didn't want it to just be the sidekicks versus the heroes or the sidekicks versus the villains who show up in issue two. I did want there to be some division within their own ranks, because at the end of the day, they're still superheroes. Okay, you know, even though they're sidekicks, they're still superheroes. And seeing how the city is starting to fall apart and seeing how the villains are starting to defeat some of the heroes, they should want to get back into it. Mm-hmm. But I also liked this idea that maybe some of them have just been pushed too far and they're not ready to go in and save the day because they have a bit of a grudge. They have an axe to grind. Mm-hmm. There are still too many heroes running around out there who are still too arrogant to realize that they need the sidekicks. Mm-hmm. And so it was very purposeful that there was going to be this division in the ranks, and some were going to want to get back in and some were not, were going to want to still stay on the sidelines. Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, I read the first two issues, even though the trade is out. I don't want to get spoilers. On the other hand, what kind of hints can you give us on towards this last couple of issues?
Okay, well, let's see. Without spoiling, so at the end of the first issue, which I don't think is giving too much away because we already talked about it, the sidekicks go on strike. And a lot of the second issue is dealing with the world when the sidekicks are no longer helping the heroes. And the third issue I really wanted to deal with getting the sidekicks. Why or why not are they in it? I wanted to go a little bit more personal. So there's less superhero action in the third issue. I slowed the pace down. I think there's really only one scene where the characters are in their costumes because I wanted to deal with them as people. I really wanted to look at the human element. So that's issue three. And then, you know, without, again, spoiling issue four, All right, I'll spoil a little bit. That's when the sidekicks decide to save the day. How about that?
Okay. Of course, that doesn't talk about how their relationships resolve with their superheroes that they've been working with, or even if they go back to the same ones or not. Because there's a lot of possibilities here, and that's the way that you've set it up I really like, because we don't necessarily know how things are going to end up. And I like a story that's told that way, because I like to be able to guess, and then I want to see, are you going to go the way that I thought it should go? But instead, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to do in there.
Thank you. Well, I did not want it to be terribly predictable, particularly when it came to the interpersonal relationships between the characters. At the end of the day, it's still a superhero story. So you can imagine, you know, there's going to be, you know, fights, and there will be villains, and there will be winners and losers. But when it came to the personal relationships, I very much wanted to be realistic and really ask myself, okay, here's a hero whose sidekick abandoned him and he just got his butt kicked by a villain. You know, how willing is he going to be to forgive that sidekick? Especially, forget about in costume, but out of costume. You know, these people, in theory, they're friends. They've worked together for years in and out of their capes. And how is that going to affect the relationship? And you know, it's not all rosy. You know, this isn't a, oh, I forgive you, you are right, and I understand I was wrong. No, that's just not what would happen. That's not who these people are.
So it's going to be great fun to read. I can't wait till they come out. Now, the trade is out, so people can get that. As far as the Comixology issues 3 and 4, do you have release dates for those?
We do. I wish I knew them. I believe issue 3 comes out next week on Comixology. And then I think either the second or third Wednesday in December is when issue 4 is going to come out.
Okay, that's good. And are they going to release the whole trade eventually as a digital version?
I have to imagine so. That's really up to Darby. It's funny, they ask me for my input, and I tell them, hey, look, I've never done this before. You know better than I do. Go right ahead. So I really gave them carte blanche. That's why the book only came out as a trade in print. They decided to only do the individual issues digitally. That was all them. They asked me my opinion, and I said, I have no idea what I'm doing. So you, by all means, you figure that out.
Well, to wrap things up, I want to read. There were little, what do you call it? They had little cards that they gave out with information about the book. And there was a paragraph that I want to read just so. And also, I have to say how great this illustration was on the other side of the card. There is Phantasm standing there in the typical superhero pose. And he's got his fists on his waist, and he's standing there. And while he's standing there, what's obviously dirty clothes is coming flying at him. And I just thought, boy, is that the worst thing that could happen to somebody, to have these dirty clothes apparently come flying out there. Here's the superhero saying, here, Clint, put these in the washer.
Yeah, you know, it's, I know you're looking, I think you're looking at the bookmark. Yeah. You can see it better on the cover. That's actually a portion, it's a sliver of the cover of the first issue. It's the cape of Mr. Marvelous, who's standing next to him out of focus. And that was Miguel. Once again, you know, Miguel did all of the covers that were in print. He didn't actually do all the digital covers, but that first issue, it's the cape of Mr. Marvelous, the blue cape that's just hitting him right in the face. But yeah, I mean, it's about being disrespected.
Right. I like that. And I'll read the paragraph real quickly. It was on the bookmark as well. It should come as no surprise to learn that within the superhero community, egos run rampant. But how does all this free-flowing narcissism impact those just outside the spotlight? Chicago finds out when 5 of the city's most loyal sidekicks finally grow tired of being disrespected by both the prima donnas they work with and the citizenry they strive to protect. It's a great concept, and it's a wonderful book. If you haven't picked up Sidekicked, and again, the ED on the end, you got to make sure you have that. And there's a hyphen between Sidekick, too, so people know. I would highly recommend you get out there and get to this book, because it's wonderful stuff. It is something new in the realm of superheroes, and I always love to find something like that. So I'm really excited about it. I hope that... Do you have any other ideas as far in the Sidekick universe? Is this the only story?
Well, I wanted very much to make sure that this was a complete story, because I really did not want people to get to the end of issue 4 and, oh, look, a cliffhanger. What happens now? I need to buy the next 4 issues. I very much wanted to tie it all up. I do have more ideas for this universe, but that's really going to be based on how well this first trade is viewed by the readers. And if we sell enough and the publisher says, hey, you know what, I think we can do another one, then there probably will be another one. Otherwise, you know, I move on to my next idea, because I've got a notebook full of them. And now I know that it's possible and I can do it. So
that's great. Now, if people can't get him, let's say the store for whatever reason can't get a hold of him, can they contact darbypop.com and order them through there?
Absolutely. Yeah, they've got a store on darbypop.com. They do have an online store that they can order them. They're on amazon.com as well. And obviously Comixology, if you just want the digital. But if you want the physical copy and for some reason your store has a hard time ordering them, then yeah, through darbypop.com or through Amazon.
Great, great. Because I highly recommend it. What I've read so far has been great. And everybody who has ever touched it or read it, tell me how great it is and really enjoy it. So again, if you haven't read Sidekicked, I really recommend you get to it. And whatever way you can get it, I would say access it and then dive in because it's good stuff.
Well, thank you, Ed. I appreciate all the very nice things you said about it.
Now, as far as other stuff going, Russell, this is your first book. You've obviously got other ideas out there. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
So my next project, interestingly enough, is not a comic book project. It's a deck of cards. I work with a local group of artists. They call themselves Catatomic Studios. You can actually look up their website. And I came to them with an idea that I had for a very long time, which was a deck of cards with every single card, just a piece of artwork based on fantasy realms. So there's elves and dwarves and orcs and humans and their warriors and their thieves and mages. And we just redid all of the artwork, all 52 pieces. And that's actually the next thing I have coming out. You can find us on Facebook. That's under Cross Realms on Facebook. And I do have a few comic book projects that are not quite in the works yet. They're still in the development stage. Mm-hmm. So I really can't talk too much about that. Mm-hmm. But I do hope that this is not the only thing you're going to be seeing from me.
Good. Well, I hope so, because I really have enjoyed this book so far. And like I said, everybody I know really, really likes it. So I hope that you do get to do more, because I'd like to read some more stuff, because there are lots of great twists and turns. And for somebody like me who's read comics for years and years, it's always nice when I can be surprised. So I really appreciate that. I want to see more from you. I really do.
Thank you. Well, you know what it is? I approach this as a fan. Mm-hmm. So my very first comic book was when I was 8 years old. It was an Archie that my grandmother gave me when I was visiting her. And by 12, I graduated to the X-Men. And really, for 25 years after that, I've just been a lover of comic books. So when I sat down to finally write one of my own, I said, okay, what would I want to read as a fan of comic books? And that's where Sidekicked came from. And that's how I'm going to approach all of my projects from here on out.
Great, great. Well, you know, much success, Russell. I hope it just keeps going and we get to see more and more, because I don't think we have nearly enough creativity in the comics industry and nearly enough good stories. So please keep it up.
Thanks, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.